We'll go ahead and dive in. And hopefully everybody who's not here will be catching up through the recorded lecture. So last time we were talking about this sinusoidal analysis approach for AC link type converters or fully resonant converters. And this analysis framework is generally going to be less accurate than what we can already do using state plane analysis. The reason we present it here are a couple of reasons. First, you'll see this often in literature. Different converters characterized according to their fundamental harmonic approximation. And that's largely useful for taking a broad look at converters, and we'll kind of leverage it to that same effect shortly as we develop this, saying what's a quick way that we can compare, for example, a series resonant converter to a parallel resonant converter to an LLC to an LCC, these different types of resonant tanks, compare them to one another without having to do state plane analysis of every single one, and get kind of broadly what are their characteristics. So the sinusoidal analysis is going to approximate all the waveforms through the entire center of the converter, all of these AC waveforms, as single frequency sinusoids. We saw with the series resonant converter, they're sinusoidal in each interval, but then between different switching intervals, there's kind of these corners, so they're not purely sinusoidal waveforms. So there's an approximation there, and it results in some amount of error. But under some conditions, we can get good approximation to the main behaviors of the converter and good understanding out of it. Okay. So we went through and we're just working our way through an example topology now, deriving what sort of equations, what sort of simplifications and reductions can we get out of making this sinusoidal approximation. So starting from the inverter, we assumed it was a active full bridge, 4 transistors, that with the DC voltage input generates this square wave in blue up at top. And if we approximate that as a sinusoidal, we solve for, okay, what is the amplitude of the fundamental in that square wave? That'll be the amplitude of dp1, our fundamental approximation for that square wave. And then also looked at the current that comes out of it, assuming we've got some passive impedance down the line, this voltage will result in some current that has some amplitude and phase. What we can really get out of that is deriving, okay, what is the DC current input as a function of whatever's happening with this current IP. So it's got some amplitude and phase. Here we derived, okay, the input current depends on that amplitude and phase of whatever the current is going out of the full bridge. Okay. So we ended here, have this equivalent network for our full bridge where there is some link between the average current at the input and the voltage at the output, and power balance is maintained, which means it can be a valid approximation to our full bridge network, which should ideally be lossless. I haven't included any on resistance or anything else in it. So we'll hopefully finish up today. We're gonna go through and do the diode rectifier and then look at the tank. And have our sinusoidal approximation for an entire AC link converter. So we'll start with just a full bridge diode rectifier. So by virtue of this being a diode rectifier, fundamentally, we're gonna be a little bit different than the active full bridge we already looked at in the SRC. Diode's full bridge is gonna be constrained on its switching time. We can't really control the phase of it. It's gonna switch whenever the current goes and forward biases as the diodes. So before we dive in, we'll kind of state explicitly what some of our approximations are here. Call this output capacitance CF. Say this is a large filter element. Such that, well, say lowercase here, the out is approximately just DC constant. Capital V out in steady state. Okay, call this load resistor R. And then I'm gonna say, let's assume the diodes are ideal. Such that they are on instantaneously whenever current flows through them, shut off instantaneously, no capacitance, no reverse recovery, anything else going on with them. Okay. And I'm going to assume for the purpose of deriving this model that the input to this looks like some current source, IS1. We'll say IS1 is some sinusoidal current. Okay. In reality, IS1 is going to come from, okay, what's going on in the tank? What does the output impedance of it look like? What is it biased by? We'll get to that next, but for the moment, I'll just assume that the thing coming in can be well approximated as some current IS1. Say it's IS1 sine of 2 pi FST minus some phase, dps, which is drawn here. This would be our dps. These axes are time, then this should really be some time equivalent of that by normalizing by 2 pi fs or omega s, but I'll just label it as vps. This is the phase shift that vps is referring to. And we've dealt with the phase shift before here. Phi in was the phase between the primary side voltage fundamental and primary side current fundamental. Same general idea with vps, except it is a different phase. It's now the phase between, we've aligned our zero time to have zero phase on our primary side voltage. So kind of our time axes are aligned to whenever the primary is switching. So this phase is whatever the delay is between when the primary switched and when this current crosses zero. Okay. Kind of our reference frame for all these things is the primary side switching as we've written it. So there's some kind of phase shift that comes as we look at this current driven by the primary side inverter going through the tank. Who knows what it is? We'll figure that out later. Okay. But assuming we can model it this way, I've got this sinusoidal current coming in, and the response of the diode bridge is going to be to generate a voltage Vs. That is, since these are ideal diodes and my output is a DC voltage, just kind of always plus or minus V out, and it depends on the polarity of IS1. Yeah.
Are they supposed to be in phase, the VS and IS?
They are exactly in phase because of these ideal diodes. So whenever this current is positive, it will turn on this diode and this diode. Whenever the current is negative, it'll have to flow up through this diode and this one. So it'll keep it exactly in phase to the extent that those are ideal diodes. Start putting some capacitance on them, then there will be some phase delay. Put inductance in series with them, it'll throw things off. If it's just ideal diodes, they are exactly in phase, these two waveforms. And we'll leverage that to make things a little more simple. So I'm going to kind of do the inverse here of what I did on the inverter. So now I'm going to say, okay, we've got this sinusoidal current. It results in a square wave voltage. Let's first do a fundamental harmonic approximation of this voltage and derive what is VS1. So for that, we take this square wave that goes between plus and minus V out, and we do a Fourier series expansion and take just the fundamental component. That whole derivation is going to be no different than what we did for the voltage here on the inverter. Everything's phase shifted, but if we look at the fundamental amplitude, it's again just going to be 4 over pi times whatever the DC level is. So we just kind of write here, VS1 is going to be 4 over pi V out, and then the full waveform will have sine 2 pi FST minus VPS. Okay, and then in the same way we've just approximated and given some description to IS1, but with that, what we can do is look at what is the average of I out, it's current here, to get our link over to the DC side, average of I out over one switching period, one over TS times the integral from zero to TS of I out of T, going through the diode rectifier, I out of T is just IS, but rectified according to the polarity of VS. Since it's exactly in phase, we get an exact rectification. Go from zero to TS, I out is magnitude IS1 dt. Our I out is going to look like this, not magnitude, absolute value, I should have said. But because there is zero phase between the switching actions of the diode bridge and the current zero crossings, then I out of T is just the absolute value of this current waveform. Our ideal full bridge rectifier just gives us absolute value of this current at the output. Okay, so we can go through and again derive what this is by actually taking this average integral, but again, it's going to be the same as what we did here for the input current, where we were taking this averaging integral over some phase shifted current here in green. So we're going to get this same result. Only difference is that this phase Vn is zero, the phase between the voltage and the current that we're looking at. So that cosine is going to be one, and we're just going to get 2/π times the amplitude. This will be 2/π. Times IS1, same as what's going on over in the inverter. Last thing I'm gonna write that's gonna help us in a moment here is our average output voltage then. So we've derived the average of this current I out by cap charge balance and steady state. There's zero average current going down into the cap. Our average voltage has to be I out times R. It's 2/π IS1 times R. So incorporating our averaging effect on this output capacitor. Okay. So now we've got an input-output port of this diode rectifier. We'll have an input voltage, looks like this VS1, DC output current that looks like I out. So I can start to sketch an equivalent circuit here. From the input to the diode rectifier, over here to its output, the load resistor R. Okay, what do we have at the output? We just have some average output current. Which is 2/π times the amplitude of IS1. And then at the input, I have this voltage source VS1, but before I draw that, I'm gonna look at the following. What happens if I take VS1 and divide it by IS1? So VS1 was 4/π V out sine of, say, omega ST minus VPS. IS1 sine omega ST minus VPS. So clearly right off the bat, these things will cancel. Or over pi V out over IS1. I'm gonna plug in for IS1 from this equation down here. Solve this for IS1, so I'll get V out times pi/2 / R. and my V outs cancel. And then I can simplify things a little bit. The R from the denominator will come up to the numerator. Pi over 2 will flip up and multiply, and I'll get 8 over pi squared times R. So the ratio between VS1 and IS1 is this fixed value. It's a scaled version of the load resistance, which means that my model here is that what this port sees is just some equivalent resistance, RE, which is 8 over pi squared times the actual load resistance, R. So our equivalent model of this diode rectifier says that the input, it just looks like some resistance, RE. And then at the output, we again have a power balance transferred between these two is the average power stays constant. So that this circuit is modeled ideally lossless. We haven't actually modeled a VF or RE or any other effects. Okay. Again, I want to remind that these are general approaches to finding these solutions, but specific results for the system that we're modeling. So for our inverter, 4 over pi VG is specific to a full bridge. We have a half bridge, there'd be some scaling factor in there. Current would be different equation based on power balance. And then here for a diode rectifier, where we approximate the input as a current source and the output as a voltage source, this is the result we get for a full bridge diode rectifier. If we had a half wave rectifier or if we had some other configuration, we could derive in the same way, but the result would be a little bit different. My next slide just shows a couple examples of that. If we had a diode rectifier with some big filter inductor here, that keeps more or less a constant current in time for I out, then that would mean that we'd have to go back and derive this with IS as the square wave and VS as some sinusoidal voltage coming from the tank. The procedure would be the same, but we have to derive changing our assumptions on what the shape of IS is. In that case, we would need to have something that looks like a voltage source here. When I say looks like a voltage source, I mean is looking back into the output of impedance of the tank, we should see a small impedance, something like a capacitor in parallel. When I say here we've got something that looks like a current source, saying it's looking back into the tank, we have some high impedance. We have, example, some high impedance here, we're gonna run into issues. I mean, it looks like we have an inductor here and we've got some inductor here. These two current sources are gonna fight each other and we'll get weird behavior. Okay? That is possible, both the high impedance or low impedance case. What it generally means is there may be some states where diodes are off or more than one diode, more than one set of diodes is conducting. Okay? So if we had like a voltage source at the output, we're skipping this LF. There'll be some interval in the period where no diodes are on. If I have this voltage source as I've drawn it, no filter inductor, then until this voltage source gets up above V out, none of the diodes are on to get high enough to forward bias those diodes. Down here, if we looked at a synchronous implementation for the rectifier, what we would end up with is generally we have to control these devices and switch them in some way. Now we've got freedoms. Control freedoms. In the duty cycle of the rectifier and can actually control VPS instead of it just being whatever it is from the tank. We can control the times at which this synchronous full bridge commutates. And that would mean that our effective model has, instead of just some equivalent resistance RE, we can make that an equivalent impedance that depends on what we select for the duty cycle and the phase shift. By putting some non-zero phase shift between the current and voltage, we can give it an imaginary component. And then by controlling the duty cycle, we can control the amplitude of that impedance. Instead of just being some fixed ratio of the load resistance, now we would have some ZE effective impedance looking in here. That is RE plus JXE controlled by these things. Actually vary both the real and imaginary component of it. So just as a reminder, the results here that we've derived for this full bridge and inverter are specific to kind of the configuration we're talking about. You might see some things on the homework where you have a different type of diode rectifier or a different type of rectifier. The general procedure is the same, but these results won't directly apply unless all these assumptions are met. Okay, but for the moment, we're going to continue with this. Now we can put really everything together and have our complete sinusoidal equivalent circuit model for this generic AC link converter with a full bridge inverter, full bridge diode rectifier. Okay, so derived expressions for all these things, I'm just going to summarize them here. IG from last class was 2 over pi IP1 cosine phi in. VP 4 over pi VG sine omega ST. Our equivalent load resistance is this 8 over pi squared times our actual load resistance R. And then our output current is 2 over pi times IS1. Okay. That models all of the active components. All that's left is to look into the behavior of the passives in the middle here. And so for some generic tank that is only passive components, we're going to analyze it as such. And the things we'll be really interested in, just looking at, for example, what is the input impedance? What is the output impedance? And what is the voltage to voltage transfer function of this passive circuit in the middle of the converter? They are not completely decoupled. Things like Zn and H of S depend on RE. I look at the impedance looking into the input of this tank. It's connected to RE. I'll see that resistance as part of the impedance I see looking into that port. But with just these three things, we can characterize the complete behavior of the tank. A Zn is going to be what tells me what Vn is. Vn is the phase between Vp and Ip. So that's just going to be the phase of this impedance at the switching frequency. H of S is going to tell me the ratio between Vp and Vs, allow me to solve a conversion ratio through this whole thing. And Z out, important for telling me how the diode rectifier operates, but then is also going to have a big impact on how the converter operates for variable load. A very low Z out, it's going to look like a voltage source. High Z out, it's going to look like a current source when not actively controlled. These are the results for a full bridge inverter, full bridge diode rectifier, and large Z out. Say by large Z out, what I mean is that here, when we analyzed this diode rectifier, we assumed this was a good approximation. What's coming out of the tank looks like a current source, means it looks like it has a large output impedance. So we can actually go through now with this and solve things like, okay, what is the conversion ratio of this converter? V out over VG. And I'm just going to do that in pieces, kind of stepping back from V out through each of these stages. So from V out, I can get to I out, leveraging the output resistance. And then from I out, I can get to IS1 from this equation of averaging of the output current. And from IS1, I can get pretty easily to VS1 using the equation for this equivalent resistance, RE. And then from VS1, I can get to VP1, going back through the tank, this transfer function H of S. And then from VP1, I can get back to VG using this equation for how the amplitude of the inverter output relates to the input. Okay, so through V out over I out is R. I out over IS1 is gonna be I out is equal to this, so I out over IS1 is 2 over pi. IS1 over VS1, the voltage and current on this equivalent resistor RE. So IS1 divided by VS1 is going to be 1 over RE. Eight over pi squared times R. Then VS1 over VP1 is just the magnitude of this tank transfer function, H of J omega S, evaluated at the switching frequency. Last step, VP1 over VG, so the amplitude here, VP1 is 4 over pi VG, so we have a 4 over pi. Okay, we'll go through and look at what cancels. This R will cancel with this R in the denominator. And then if I take this term, 4 over pi, and my 2 over pi, I multiply them together, I get 8 over pi squared. I've got 8 over pi squared in the denominator here. So all that stuff cancels out. What I get is the conversion ratio just equal to the magnitude of this tank transfer function evaluated at the switching frequency. The behavior of this resonant converter is going to be entirely dictated by what's going on in the tank, which makes sense. So there's my complete equivalent circuit. Now let's look into generically what the behavior of this thing is going to be in steady state. So on the previous slide, everything just depends on what's going on in the tank. Really mostly going to be concerned about the behavior of this tank. So I'm just going to take that part of my equivalent circuit and examine it a little bit more. Okay. VP1 is just a scaled version of the input voltage. So just got some voltage source here. I just care about conversion ratio. I might not care about that extra scale factor. So given that the tank is entirely passive, what's left in this tank block is just inductors, capacitors, and possibly transformers. Then this segment of the equivalent circuit, I can really model as some Thevenin equivalent. All these passives in the middle, I'm just gonna replace them with some Thevenin source, VTH, Thevenin impedance, ZTH, connected to my RE resistance. And And I'll say I go through kind of the typical process. We haven't defined a tank yet, so we're not going to be able to write equations for it. But I know that I could find VTH, or at least the magnitude of it, the magnitude of the open circuit voltage. I'm going to call, let's say, magnitude of VOC. Let's call that capital VOC. So if I have zero loading resistance, I should just see the Thevenin voltage. And then this impedance ZTH, just by definition of Thevenin equivalent circuit, is open circuit voltage divided by short circuit current. And generically, we could also say that's equal to the output impedance. All right. So the impedance looking back into this circuit with all the sources turned off. We look back this way, ZO, shut off the source, we would see just the Thevenin equivalent impedance. Okay. So what can we say about the behavior of this circuit? Well, our VS is equal to VTH times this impedance divider, RE over ZTH plus RE. Go through and solve this. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go from time varying signals and just look at magnitudes here. Take the magnitude of VS, good measure, I'll square it. Is equal to the magnitude of everything over here on the right side squared. And I'm going to start breaking that apart. So the magnitude of VTH is this VOC squared times RE squared. Over down here, I have to square out these terms, but since RE constant, I could say RE squared plus magnitude ZTH squared. Some small approximation. I'm going to even delete this, and I'm going to call it Z naught, just to skip ahead a step. Okay, now I'm going to multiply both sides by the denominator. Say magnitude of VS squared times RE squared plus 2 to VS squared times 2 to Z naught squared equal to VOC squared RE squared. And then I'm going to divide everything through by that numerator. So we'll say this is equal to 1. I'm going to put this over VOC squared RE squared. This over VOC squared RE squared. And I'm going to write those in reverse order. So last step here, these REs cancel. And this first term becomes magnitude of VS squared over the open circuit voltage squared. In the second term, I'm going to look individually at both of these two things. So I've got magnitude VS squared over RE squared. That is magnitude of this voltage squared divided by RE squared, which is just magnitude of IS squared. VS over RE is IS. And then Z naught magnitude over VOC. Z naught divided by VOC is going to give us 1 over ISC. So this will be ISC squared in the denominator. What does this tell us then about the relationship between IS and VS, or what this thing looks like at the output port? Okay. These are intermediate. VS and IS are kind of here in the circuit, but each is just scaled versions of what's going on at the output port. So their behavior is going to be indicative of what's going on at I out and V out, just scaled by these 8 over pi squared, 2 over pi factors. really looking at scaled versions of the output current and output voltage. And they conformed to this equation, square them both and normalize by some factors. It was this equation, it's the equation for some ellipsoid. Right. So I have a behavior that looks like this, where maximum value of IS is ISC, value of VS is VOC, or open circuit voltage and short circuit current. And in between the two of them, we have some segment of an ellipse. Okay. Looks a lot like what we did with state plane analysis, but ISC is not necessarily VOC over R0 in a way that'll make this into a circle. Generally, some oblong ellipse. And that is called a load characteristic or output characteristic of any of these resonant type converters. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, depends on what we're trying to achieve out of it. But very rarely do we have an application where we want this type of characteristic to come out of our converter, i.e. as load current varies, our output voltage kind of at high current varies a lot. Low current varies a little bit, but changes all over the place. It means we're going to need a lot of control, and that control is going to be relatively difficult. Okay. We think about for some load resistance, RE, if I plot VS is equal to IS times RE, I get a line like this, the slope of 1 over RE. And so for this value of equivalent load resistance, here's my operating point. If my load resistance increases, this is 1 over RE prime. This would be my operating point. If it decreases, this is my operating point. Three different values of this output resistance. Okay. And I'll swing across this ellipsoid. Most often, what do we want out of a converter is we want something that has a characteristic that looks like this, right? Regardless of what the load current is, it has some constant voltage at the output. It's just a DC output converter. So in order to achieve that as the load varies, we need to do is control this thing. In this case, this is the load characteristic at some switching frequency. The diode rectifier, one of the common ways to control is to vary switching frequency. This would be at FS2, different curves at different values of switching frequency. And we would have to jump between these different switching frequencies in order to regulate to keep a constant output voltage. Can be done with some active and intelligent control, but it is going to be a little bit more difficult than a typical converter. But it's something like a buck converter and looked at it on these same axes. I would see its characteristic looks something like this without any control. If I give it a constant duty cycle, the output voltage is nearly constant. If I go up to really high current, the losses will cause the output voltage to drop a little bit, but it's almost a perfect voltage source just inherently. When I go to control that to make it a voltage source, it's going to be relatively simple and linear. These resonant converters, since they have elliptic type output characteristics, they're a little bit harder to control, require a bit more design on the control front. That was in the early days of designing these fully resonant converters, a big limitation when there weren't, essentially free digital control options available. Couldn't say just throw some more logic at it on a IC or on a microcontroller. You can customize it to do kind of whatever you want in terms of modulation and control. We had to build this thing entirely out of op-amps and BJTs. It was a lot harder to do this variable switching frequency, elliptic characteristic output impedance control. Today, not so bad. Also, more often than not, For many applications, we may be replacing this diode rectifier with a synchronous one anyway and using additional digital control to control the phase and duty cycle of that, for example. So this canonically is a big thing to teach about resonant converters, how difficult they are today with modern digital control options. This is a manageable problem. Okay. So then you can start looking at what is this tank transfer function for specific converters to understand what are their characteristics and behaviors. So we'll go through and look at some of the most common tank configurations. We'll start with SRC as an example. And now that we know kind of generally how they operate, we can just look at the tank characteristics, the transfer function, the output impedance to some degree, the input impedance as well, and know the main characteristics of those converters just from looking at the tank. Okay, so our SRC, the same nomenclature we had before, the tank looks like LLCR. And then the tank is going to be connected over here on the right side to this equivalent load RE. Look at things like Zin, Zout, and then from VP to VS, our transfer function H of S. Go through and solve them now just from this circuit. So let's first write Zn. Going to be SLL plus 1 over SCR plus RE. Just all three elements in series. Then our H of S, our transfer function between VS and VP. Going to be an impedance divider that just looks like RE over the sum of those three impedances, which we've already written as Zn. Go and write that out. H of S looks like RE over what we wrote for Zn to get everything in kind of normalized form. I'll multiply the top and bottom by SCR to get it out of the denominator in the denominator. If I multiply the numerator by SCR, I'll get it here, the denominator, S squared LLCR plus SCR RE. Plus one. Standard form. We would write this as H of S is equal to down here in the denominator. This is S over omega naught squared plus S over Q omega naught. I'm going to call this Q, Q sub E. We'll say why in a moment. And then in the numerator, it's the same term as this S over Q E omega naught term. So it's S over Q E omega naught. S C R R E. Numerator in the middle term in the denominator. Okay. Q E in standard form, that's just what this first order coefficient of S looks like, is 1 over Q omega naught. Call it QE because it is the effective quality factor. Considering RE loading, we differentiate that from within the design phase. You might look at the quality factor of this resonant tank, just LL and CR. Where the quality factor is according to damping by their own parasitic resistances. And you try to design that quality factor obviously very high for high efficiency. Any parasitic resistance of LL or CR are going to decrease your efficiency. With QE, we're talking about quality factor where the damping is determined by this resistance RE, which is actually modeling the power that goes to the load. So if this quality factor is really low, it doesn't necessarily mean things are inefficient. means a lot of power is going through to the load, which will have its own set of problems associated with it, but doesn't necessarily mean a low quality resonant that's going to be very lossy like it would if we were considering the unloaded quality factor. Okay, so clarity, let's define these things. LLCR, QE is going to be, let's define our normal characteristics first. R naught is root L over CR, and then QE is R naught over RE, ratio of the characteristic impedance to the resistance. Okay. So our main characteristics, if I went through and actually derived what is H of J omega S, we're not going to do all the algebra for this. Our conversion ratio is the magnitude of this transfer function at the switching frequency. That should be a subscript. And with a bunch of algebra, we can get to this is 1 over the square root of 1 plus QE squared, 1 over F minus F squared. Conversion ratio just depends on this effective loading resistance to give me QE, and then the ratio of the switching frequency to the resonant frequency of the circuit. Okay, so from there, we're going to start looking at for the SRC first and then for other converters. What can we glean from looking at these curves versus frequency of things like the input impedance or the transfer function or the output impedance? Time will stop there for today, pick up there on Wednesday. The general idea is going to be, okay, as we look at varying this the effective resistance RE and changing the quality factor of the circuit, really looking at changing loading of it, and we can see how the converter behaves under light load, how it behaves under heavy load, and how it transitions in between. What are the ranges over which we have inductive loading at Zn so we can possibly zero voltage switch the primary inverter? And how does the transfer function change with loading? We'll look at that plotting various curves of things like the input impedance, output impedance, or transfer function. We'll go through a few different tanks, have some broad comparison, and that'll be about it for what we're going to discuss on sinusoidal analysis. So we'll pick up there on Wednesday. We'll talk to everybody then. Thanks.